Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me.
Hola, Mike Cosentino, Democratic Perspective.
And this morning we have Andrea Cristal, philosopher in again. We had her before, and we're talking about, well, truth in politics. We're talking about information. Mike wants to rant about Trump's craziness for a couple of minutes.
No, we simply want to mention that there is no truth. We're supposed to be talking. We got a philosopher here this morning, and who actually teaches a wonderful class in finding agreement in politics. At least from this microphone, there's not a lot of agreement, unless you agree that there is no truth except political truth.
So why don't you go down when she's speaking? Because Andrea has a whole series of things there, in the topics she's talking about.
Our guest,
League of Women Voters stuff, right?
Our guest this morning, Andrea Cristal, is a League of Women Voters board member. She is. She will lead Finding Agreement in Politics National Issues from deliberations. I can read. This will be Wednesday, July 5th through the 26th, 2:45 to 4:15, room 40.
Coming right up.
Yeah. They will use National Issues Forum model to debate about the following topics. So if you're feeling political, as many people are these days, or at least confused and want to know what's going on, at least you have a way to talk through it anyway.
Andre's a great moderator for keeping conversation civil and also sort of focused.
Yes, I've never struck her yet. I've never thrown anything at her. The topics are going to be We the People, a role in the 21st century American politics, safety and justice, how should communities reduce violence, end of life, who should, what should we do for those that are dying. Participants will be invited to participate in online deliberations and using game-based common grounds for action platform.
So it's discussing sort of sensitive and interesting issues that people actually have disagreements that are not always liberal conservative, right?
Right, and the focus really is where we can find agreement. And all of these topics are complex, and we don't expect people to agree about every point. But so often, when it comes to sensitive political matters, we're really focused on the points of disagreement. However, we often find that there are also often points of agreement. And so these conversations are structured to locate those points of agreement and to see where those exist, how we might take action in our communities to move forward.
But isn't truth one of those things that people take really personal, this sort of thing, this kind of exploration that you're talking about? This is, and so your job becomes to moderate becomes difficult.
Let's take climate change or global warming as an example. And I was reading
silly liberal notion.
Yeah, it's a factual. The problem is it's factual. And what I was reading among philosophers from the last few thousand years, a couple of thousand years, factual truth, say the Gulag in the Soviet Union. It is known by everybody in the Soviet Union that these things exist, pretty much. Yet it's you can't talk about it. You can't mention it. It's the elephant in the room. And the way it's countered is not only lies and distortions, but by building up opinion that is not happening as much as you can. And so we go to climate change, that basically the scientific information has been in since the 70s. There's almost no agreement, disagreement among people studying the issue. So you have a factual information, Andrea, coming in that the climate is changing, the climate is warming because of human-produced CO2. All right. The way you counter that is say it's not happening, you lie about it. But the other way is like what happened with smoking. You create an opinion in the public sphere that's different from the factual information. That there are two ways to oppose factual information from getting into politics. One is lying about what it is. The other is creating a body of opinion that doesn't allow it any space in the public domain.
Right. I mean, it sounds to me like what you're talking about are cultural norms and personal and group identity. So, you know, whether or not, you know, the gulag is there, there might be cultural norms about whether it's okay to talk about it. And that is completely separate from whether or not these things exist.
The thing is that you have... I think when I was reading through the philosophers over the ages, you had the feeling, and reading Hannah Arendt, that none of the philosophers really thought that opinion and lies would in the end overwhelm truth. All their skepticism about philosophical truth versus the public sphere of opinion, say, in ancient Rome or none of them ever thought that the truth would ever be overwhelmed by opinion and lies in the long run.
You know, I think so when we talk about truth, there are different ways we can think about truth, and one is in terms of there being objective facts about the world. Like it's true that there is a tree outside this window, right? That just seems to be something that is the case. There are other sorts of truth, right? Like about what is the nature of goodness. And that's not objectively verifiable in the same way that empirical claims about the world can be objectively verifiable. Yet we have a sense that there is some truth about what it is to be good.
Right. How do you arrive at these things except through sort of Socratic dialogue? I mean, what we have is an entire internet and political world where people are asserting opinions, but nobody is engaging in the kind of dialogue that reveals the basis of opinions, the underlying motives of them. For all the great, huge freedom of speech that's now going on the internet, what we don't have is an engaged dialogue that reveals the origins and truth of what's being said.
Right, and I think some of the questions that really matter most to us don't have final answers in the way that, you know, empirical facts about the world can provide definite answers. So, you know, there is a tree. We can verify that or not. We can tell what kind of tree it is. But when we think about the questions that matter most to us, you know, what is the value of friendship? You know, how should I raise my children? What's the correct function of government? We believe that there are better and worse answers to these questions, that there's probably not just one answer to these questions that's appropriate for all situations. And so there's value in thinking about these things and discussing them with one another, because while there's not one final right answer, there are certainly better and worse answers.
Well, how do you get from a worse answer? Give me one of those questions again, to a better answer. How does the dialogue lead to that?
So I would say a worse answer to, like, what is the function of government would be to take health care away from 20 million people. A better answer in that situation would be to keep the Affordable Care Act in place, because most reasonable people can agree that good mental and physical health is a value that every person enjoys. And in first world countries like the United States of America, this health care should be provided to as many people as possible.
And that's wonderful, Andrea. And she is so convinced of this. She is teaching a class called The Goodness of Government. And even just the name of that class would explode heads over there in Rimrock. Mm-hmm. But she's teaching this class July 12th as part of an Ali class. It's called The Goodness of Government. It's right over here at the Sedona campus of Yavapai College. You can find out the time, but I'll also tell you that it's 1 to 2:30. And so choosing that title is great, The Goodness of Government. And most of us recognize that government does so much for us. And many liberal organizations point out, you know, that Mitch McConnell had help in his early years with polio. Paul Ryan couldn't have gotten through school without. So these thugs that are taking health care away that you just met from 20 million people, when most reasonable people would think that keeping people healthy would be a good idea. We have a political party that denies both of the things you're talking about this morning, folks. Climate change. We have only political party in the world, as you have pointed out, that the only organization that denies climate change.
I've forgotten the guy's name, Mike, but he had an interesting idea, and he said in terms of healthcare systems, you should take like 7-8 healthcare systems of different countries, you know, Spain and France and Switzerland and so forth and so on. Write them on a little piece of paper, put them in a hat.
Yeah.
Draw one out.
Yeah.
It will be better than our health system, whichever one it is.
Well, I like that. I heard George Will the other day talking on TV. George Will is a Republican. I call him a Republican interpreter. This is a man of philosophic bent, highly intelligent, but somehow he ended up as a Republican. I don't know how that works. So that means he's not an elite.
He hates people.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It must be. But he did say that Donald Trump is so out of touch that if he got a single-payer health care program on his desk from Congress, he would sign it. He believes, as we're talking about here, that health care is, at least American health care, is confusing and complicated. And who knew?
How?
He said, everybody knew. And I'm quoting you. Everybody knew that health care was complicated. Donald Trump says, who knew health care was so complicated? Well, quite frankly, anybody that spent 10 minutes looking at it. And that's a quote from George Will. So the point is, yeah, we could get single-payer health care but the Republicans are so philosophically.
All right, Mike, I have a proposition for you and our philosopher. Here's a statement that I think is true. The Senate health care bill is better better than the House health care bill because a million more people will be able to keep their health insurance. That's a true statement. Or if I take out the qualifier and just say a million more people will be able to keep their health insurance under the Senate bill than under the House bill, that's a true statement, right?
Well, that's a judgment. Right, you're judging that one bill is better than another. However, you are, unlike many people in politics today, giving a factual reason to support that judgment. Right, so you're building an argument. You know, the claim that it's better, can't necessarily be proven. However, you're giving supporting reasons, which are objectively verifiable facts, in support of your reasons.
Oh,
I wish, Steve, you were running for office.
Okay, so let's stay with this just a minute. Okay, so my statement is factually true that I'm backing up my judgment, right? Except that the difference between the Senate and the House health care bill is that one of them knocks 22 million people off of health care, and the other one knocks 23 million. So we have a literal statement that's true, just the factual part of this, Andrea. But when we look at the context, the statement's misleading about the health care programs, right?
Well, yes, because overall you would say that anything that results in 20-plus million people losing health care is probably not a good proposal.
So my argument that the Senate bill will leave a million more people on it sounds good at first glance until you know the context of it, which is they're kicking millions of people off of health care.
Right. So you might say killing 99 people is better than killing 100 people, yet you would not want to say that killing 99 people is good.
Right.
Ceteris paribus. Yeah.
Well, at this juncture, we want to make sure we do all the things we have to do. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks early in the show for helping us with this thing. We want to thank El Portal, Steve Segner, and his crew over there. We want to make sure that you know that we have this show on Saturday. This is talking about philosophical things and truth and falsehoods is complicated, and you might want to listen to this again. You can we rebroadcast this very same show at 12:15 on Saturday. And you can find, of course, the podcasts on vvid.org. But we want to talk about money. It does. We've, in order to keep a Democratic perspective on the air twice a week, takes a little cash. And we think it's worthwhile. We think we provide a service here at CHASM. We give you an alternative viewpoint. We have wonderful guests like Andrea Cristal, who has a business in town. You can find her and talk to her, and that's what she does. She will talk to you about truth, justice, and the American way. Specs, Andrea Cristal at Specs Sedona.
You can talk about truth, justice, and the American way, Mike, while you're floating down the Colorado River.
I
guess when you land, I don't think you can do it on the raft, right?
Yeah. No, if I talk about truth, justice, and the American way at the bar at Kate's, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm,
for the price of a Jameson's, you can get all the truth that you want.
All right. So we have an environment, and Mike wants to talk about Donald Trump, and he seems to be decompensating. He's just sort of falling apart as president and doing stranger and stranger things, like his wrestling match with a CNN modified face. But we're in an environment where we have the president of the United States lying day after day after day. And what's there's lies, right, Andrea? There's falsehoods, there's misstatements. What it creates an environment. I think this is not philosophy exactly, but I think in terms of psychology, it creates an environment where it's okay to do all these things. If you can say something that's completely false and it has no complications and no results or kickback for it, then. You know, why can't you talk about grabbing women's genitals on national public radio or something?
Well, you can't do that because it's in poor taste. That would be a reason not to do it. But I think, you know, there's a reasonable analogy between lying and taking a life, and that is that it's not just the fact that something occurred, it's the intent that someone had when it occurred. So we make a distinction, for example, between manslaughter and murder. And I think similarly, when false information is given out, it makes a difference to us whether that was done unintentionally or whether there's deliberate deception. And I think what's so disturbing about this administration is that there seems to be such a large degree of deliberate deception.
Yes, day after day after day. I don't know, Mike. I mean, what do you think's the effect of all this? I mean, we should ask Andrea, what's the effect of having this going on? And there's always been sleight of hand in politics. So some bad information comes out about Donald Trump and Russia, and he accuses Obama of doing this. It's distraction. A lot of this stuff we see and go is not so much philosophical as psychological. You throw up a bunch of stuff in the air, and it distracts people. So a lot of his mm-hmm. antics distract people from what's actually going on in Congress. I mean, which is taking a lot of people's medical away. So in this environment where truth seems of such little value, what do you do? Andrea, we're little individual people. What can we do in this environment that will create a better dialogue, a better public sphere?
Well, I mean, I think one thing that we can make a distinction between is psychology and philosophy, right? And so psychology is really concerned with how people think and act and make decisions, right? Trying to understand the way people do that. Philosophy is a word that, you know, gets thrown around a lot and seems pretty airy-fairy, but what philosophy really just means is the love of wisdom, right? And what is wisdom? Well, it's different from knowledge, right? But it might require knowledge. And earlier, Steve, you were mentioning some of these judgments, like how are we going to judge whether this is a good bill or see that it's a harmful bill? And I think that's where wisdom comes in, right? We need wisdom to make these judgments, right,
I think
which aren't factual.
One way to see this is the difference between Obama and his handling of Trump. In other words, his handling of this whole thing right now is that philosophically we're going to survive this. Psychologically, we have this maniac, this lunatic, this certifiable lunatic running the country. But psychologically, philosophically, Obama's whole position is we will survive this. We have our founding documents will take care of us. Our institutions will take care of it. Even somebody as psychologically nuts, the philosophy of the United States, and I know a lot of people that believe this, at the bar at Kate's and every place else, they believe that our philosophy is so sound, so strong, we'll be okay.
Okay. James Madison, we all know who James Madison is, one of the founders of the United States, said, all governments rest on opinion, not on truth, not on facts, but on opinion. In other words, and so what we see is a huge growing separation between people seeking truth and telling the truth and people trying to create opinion to control other people and to define policy. So even back in the founders' day, they were concerned about opinion versus the philosophical truth maybe you could get by reasoning.
Well, again, I mean, when it comes to truth, it depends on what kind of truth we're talking about. If it's an objectively verifiable fact, that's one thing. But some people want to say, you know, which policy is best? And that you can use empirically verifiable facts in support of one judgment or another. But that judgment that we have to make, right, about what the correct function of government is, how to raise our children, what the value of friendship is, those are things that really matter to us. And those are judgments that can never be proven, even though facts might be marshaled in support of our judgment. So opinions ultimately are our judgments and decisions about how to organize our own lives, about how to treat other people, about how to structure our government. So opinions, judgments, absolutely are the most important thing. In fact, we can't solve those things mathematically. And so we have to ask ourselves, why are so many people identifying with or having an opinion that something that seems to be outside of their own self-interest, right? Why are people supporting something that is not in their own self-interest? And, you know, one answer that's been proposed by George Lakoff is that people vote not according to their self-interest, but according to their identity, who they see themselves identified with, how they see their values represented. And so I think that's the real hard work that we have to do, is to ask ourselves what values are being appealed to and how people are identifying.
And what's being denied, like American history of slavery, you know, the impact of that, there's a denial there, the way we treat the indigenous population. There's a denial there. There's a denial of the American use of power after World War II.
The way we treated women.
Some of which was good, but a lot of it was in a misguided self-interest and extremism.
Well, the biggest,
we're seeing all this now.
My personal favorite lie that continuing America is our labor history. How many times the force has been used against American workers in the last 200 years is staggering, and yet very little of that has made it into traditional history books. People like Howard Zinn certainly have talked about it, and those instructors that have included some of these great historians in their teachings get some of that out, but it certainly is not as universal as some of the lies.
The widely beloved Karl Marx said in his book on ideology that the ruling class of any society controls the opinion in the society. It always occurs. Now, I'm not a Marxist, but I thought that was a provocative thing to say.
Well,
isn't that what we're dealing with, Mike, is the people who, with all the resources, are dominating public opinion, creating ideologies, and the rest of us are scrambling around to talk about it?
Well, I want to ask Andrea this. The perception is reality, and that's really what we're talking about. My first day in politics was that if somebody, whether it was Hamilton or Karl Rove and George Bush, if somebody can create a perception, an opinion, as you're calling it, that becomes the reality. And Andrea is saying that depending on your tribe, you are much more willing, or depending on your group, you're much more willing to accept falsehoods or accept opinions that are detrimental to your health or the health of your of
so
those.
So what I've seen, Mike, is, and I'll let Andrea go, talk about this, but I want to get the other half of it. The other half of it is there's lots of feel-good stuff, like we're the greatest country in the world.
That's true.
Right. I'm a self-made man. I got everything I got on my own.
That's right.
All right. So there's competing things, Andrea, some of them negative that we don't want out, and some of them not really true that we want to celebrate and participate in. Because, you know, and it's not that America is not a great country. It's that that's being used. The fact that America is a great country is being used to hide its flaws, I think, in the dialogue.
Right. Well, you know, some of these questions about identity, too. I mean, one of our great abilities as human beings is that to some extent we can overcome our nature. And what I mean by that is, although I might associate with this group or feel this way strongly, or there's certain emotional triggers, and, you know, there's advertising and all sorts of messaging that's designed, right, to trigger us emotionally. But if we have, like, the self-possession and control to say, okay, I realize that I'm having this emotional response, but now I'd like to think about and evaluate the reasons for that and see if it really makes the most sense for me to feel that way. Now, doing that takes a sort of meta-awareness, right, an awareness of how I am instinctively reacting, and then asking myself if that's the best possible reaction to have. And so on the one hand, we have these ideals of logic and how we would go about forming our opinions, and these realities that they tend to be very emotionally based. And I think that this is sort of complex thing to understand, and it's one of the reasons why, historically at least, we have supported public education, because this is a skill, right, and a value that we can instill, and it's really required to have an effective democracy. And so I'm switching the topic a little bit here, but I think, you know, one of the most harmful things that's being done right now is the overall assault on public education, both at the K-12 and at the post-secondary level, right? Because without intelligent, reflective people who can recognize when they're simply having an emotional trigger, right, and when they really need to look at the reasons behind this, we won't have a functioning democracy. And with Betsy DeVos and the other things that are happening, there's no doubt.
Because this is a political show.
You could repeat that on every show, every 10 minutes, for the rest of my life. And that's so true and so important.
So my question is on what you're saying is, in whose interest is it to do this? And why are they interested in destroying public? Why do they ban critical thinking in Texas schools?
Yeah. Well, I think we know this now. I mean, they want to subvert the will of the majority.
Right, and control the mob with emotion. So, I mean, I think Trump's latest wrestling...
Yes.
You know, appearance. I mean, I think that's fascinating. I mean, what is that an appeal to, right? Is that an appeal to anyone's interest? Is that an appeal to something that's good for the American people? Or is that sort of a lowest common denominator pitch to something visceral and non-cognitive, right, in the American public?
And outside the ring, by the way. I mean, this is the most exciting part. About, they tell me about all of these fake wrestling matches, WWF, is all the stuff that goes outside. So he beats this reporter up outside the ring, which is believe me, was not by accident.
This man is the president of the United States.
I understand.
Posting this,
you'd,
Mike.
Talk to him, son. Don't talk to me. I respect the office, but it's impossible to respect this man. And you hear that a lot on the internet when you say things and do things. You point out the psychological problems of our leader, and rather than trying to hang with the philosophy that we can agree on.
Let me ask Andrea a question about, all right, so we have a disagreement you were talking about earlier about a judgment. You know, I think healthcare should be extended to everybody. I think it's a right. You think it's not a right. You think it's something else. How do we bridge that gap? First, we have the facts. See, we have the facts all correct. We agree on the actual facts, mm-hmm. and they're 90% correct. Then how do we get so that – how do we get so that you and I have a dialogue that that creates a change in judgment?
So the course that you mentioned earlier, the deliberation, right, and coming to agreement in politics, I mean, we have to engage in a conversation and a word that unfortunately has been given a negative connotation by the Republican Party, but that's compromise. I mean, I have to realize that although I have initial intuitions about this, and by the way, I do think healthcare is right. You characterize it as if I don't think that, but I do think that.
I don't think you do. But for the sake
of argument, I'll go along with that. But I think then we have to spend time talking to each other to try to find out why. Like, what are your values that support that? What are my values that underlie that? And if we do that work, right, we might find that we have some shared values. In almost every case, we do have shared values. But that takes work, and it takes a disposition of goodwill. And I think that is really one of the most harmful things that we see in the political climate today, is that there's no disposition of goodwill or trying to work together.
Amen.
I mean, the way the Republicans worked against Obama, the fact that he was unable to appoint a Supreme Court justice, the way they just opposed out of principle everything he did, shows me that those people should not be representing the interest of Americans, because they have no goodwill and they're not willing to come together and compromise. I mean, we need a new slate of political leaders in Arizona and at the federal level.
Disposition of goodwill has become my favorite phrase. You can listen to phrases like this and others. This is starting. She's starting this class the day after tomorrow. That's Wednesday afternoon, 2-ish. You know, this is Sedona. We 2:45, 2:30. You know,
Michael.
Yeah. Now, when you can show up, right down the street here. No, where's that going to be? That class.
You have a psychologist at the Sedona Center.
At the Sedona Center. Okay. Every Wednesday for the rest of the month, you can have chats just like this one, and you know, take your medicine.
So we have this dialogue. I come to a different conclusion. Let's put it on me. I say I'm against. I think everybody should pay for their own health care. They should all stand on their own feet. And if they can't do that, if they can't, why should we pay for their health care? That's my position. And your position is, and how do we bridge? I mean, I've taken a very extreme position, you know. But how do you bridge that? It's on the basis of shared values that are underneath the ideology and arguments.
I mean, so as a philosopher, what I would look are sort of like the underlying values or worldviews behind that. And when you say everyone should stand on, you know, their own 2 feet. I ask whether that's possible, and I guess I would look at societies around the world and say that I can give you a lot of reasons why I don't think it is. And for example, anyone who has ever benefited from the use of public roads, for example, in this country, has not done everything by herself or himself, despite the fact that she might have had, you know, terrific ingenuity and, you know, enterprise and worked hard. It wasn't all by herself, but with taxpayers and others in the communities coming together, providing infrastructure and resources and security that allow business transactions to occur, right? So we have this myth of the individual that is just – it's false. Right? As communities, our fates are interdependent. And so recognizing that, I recognize that as a community of strong, healthy people, right, our interconnected fate is likely to be better if we all take care of one another. And while there's a reason for me to believe perhaps I did it all by myself, because people talk about a self-made man.
Who would like to think that we did it all ourselves?
But to extend that, Andrea,
yes, and I've said that. I've said that on the show that 89A would be a one-way dirt road if it wasn't for the collective tax actions of people. So if you think you did it by yourself, you couldn't get to work by yourself. You couldn't take your money to the bank by yourself. But it's the same thing. The reason we're all not dying of cholera is because we got together and created sewers, or at least systems that take care of the waste products. And the reason we're not lighting candles and rendering deer fat is because we got together and created power companies, all of which are the collective action, tax actions of a society that had a disposition of goodwill. And I'm going to find ways to say that for the rest of my life.
And how is that not the dominant? Look, there, folks, there is no libertarian society in the whole world. It doesn't work. That extreme vision of stand on your own, even in a tribal society where you've got a half dozen people wandering around, it doesn't happen.
Finally got to her.
Okay. So I just want to say that I think that these terms such as libertarian, socialist, capitalist are generally not helpful. They're used in gross and sweeping ways in which they're never manifest. And I think libertarian is a term particularly that gets misused and thrown under the bus because one of the greatest libertarian theorists, John Stuart Mill, right, was also an advocate of universal public education, one of the first advocates for women's rights, and advocate for women's suffrage, advocated education and improved conditions in public, very much understood the public good, also was a staunch advocate for individual liberties, including the freedom of speech and free enterprise, but also regulation. So I think that we use these terms in such sweeping ways. What we really need to talk about are individual policy decisions, how we want to do things. There's no absolute free enterprise. There's no absolute socialism. What we need to do is look at particular policies, which is nowhere as fun, right, as making these grand sweeping claims, and decide what we need to do in individual instances.
Okay, so there's a fire department here, and I will say libertarians are opposed to increasing and funding the fire department. Now, this is a complex factual issue, but the thing is that we have opposition to funding the fire department in ways that will save our butts.
You know, I would consider myself in many important respects a libertarian. I also support funding the fire department. And I also think that if you look to the classical libertarians, they would unquestionably be in favor of doing things like supporting a public fire department.
Yeah, but that's not the modern term. Let's go to – okay, so what you're saying is that it's almost like Socratic dialogue. You can't learn the truth by just having an opinion or hearing something. If you get into dialogue, you find out that you're wrong and people have a different view than you do, and then you begin to understand it. But what I see on the internet now, and I saw it very recently, is people just yelling at each other about the fire department, but particularly the people opposed to increasing the money for the fire department. It's all rhetoric, and it goes from – I don't want to idealize the dialogue between liberals and conservatives back when I was going to college, but it was there. We actually talked to each other. And now on the internet, the first thing that happens is people are yelling at each other, and they don't go through the discussion and disagreement stage. They just yell.
That's right. And one of the most harmful things about that is inciting that type of vitriol provokes a response in people that is really addictive. I mean, people are inciting that on the internet, and the people that are engaging in that start to feed off that sort of negative emotion in an addictive way, and the psychology of that is understood. So again, that is why public education is so important, because unless you can recognize that that's what's happening, that this is some sort of emotional trigger and not really a logical argument, you can't really effectively evaluate your own behavior.
Why don't you talk more about that, Andrea? That's an interesting topic.
Well, the addiction to while she's thinking, I just want to add that the addiction to adrenaline. Yeah. Is especially in males, and maybe not exclusively, is powerful. Ask any cop, ask any service member, so what she's saying is what you guys are talking about is getting that emotional reaction can be really, really, it's like it used to be a Saturday night fight, you know. It used to, if you were a Marine and you threw some punches, there was nothing wrong with that. That was, if you watch The Hurt Locker tonight on HBO, you're going to see these guys beating each other up that are having fun doing it. And some of us have trouble understanding that if it wasn't for adrenaline. But Andrea's shaking her head.
How does this, go to Andrea, how does this overwhelm the philosophy and the truth. In other words, we have a process that's overwhelming a dialogue about the facts and values.
Right, and when we were talking about this addiction to adrenaline and violence, right, and pretty much using like our lowest level cognitive functioning, right, that's not going to help us grapple with incredibly complex situations like healthcare, right? In order to use higher order reasoning systems in the brain, we can't have, right, our flight or flight responses activated in that way. So it's really when people are engaging in that level, they're not engaging in critical thought, they have no goodwill, they're addicted to this sort of adrenaline rush that often results in violence, which I hope is not how we want our political system to operate.
I hope, but and it's the same thing with any complex. Climate change is complex, and we don't want complex, we want simple, because then we can react. George Bush, Kolarov perfected this. It's continued under Trump and maybe all political systems. And I haven't and certainly Obama did too to some degree. Everybody, every country does it to some degree. But that's the don't give me the Democrats are always confused. We started this show on the idea that the other side was making bank on telling lots of lies, so we were simply going to tell the truth. But what we have found, and what we knew going in on Democratic perspective, is that the truth is subtle. It's complex.
Right.
It takes time. Andrea is setting up all these talks. League of Women Voters is setting up. They have, let's talk politics at the senior center that they don't call a senior center. They have... And all of this is happening as an antidote to this kind of thing that has become so rampant. So we want that, and I'm picking on the poor people in Rimrock. If you have a right to be mad, call in, but call Tom names, call the owner names, not me. The idea is that give
your
us
insults to Rimrock.
That's right. Give us
control,
sound bites.
Right.
Give us sound bites. Don't give us all those elitist details. And so all of these labels have been thrown at Democrats because they want to get to handle some of these complex things.
But people try to talk. I was just, Andrea, to go to your point. People try to talk about politics, and they very quickly get mad at each other, and it overwhelms even in the kind of situation you're in. We got 2 minutes.
Okay. You know, I just want to say to Mike's point about, you know, speaking about people in Rimrock, I hope some people from Rimrock will come to the class at Ollie. I'd love to see you there, and we'd love to hear your perspective, because I do think that you're right, that the truth is subtle, that we really need to listen and understand other people's values and see where they're coming from. I think that's the first step. But I think that it's an uphill battle, and one of the reasons that the left is really disadvantaged is because we're trying to do this careful, deliberative work, which isn't exciting, right? The nerve centers and everybody, which isn't, you know, making people jump up and down. And the Republicans simply have a slate of brutal talking points that are often racist, misogynistic, hateful, violent, and they are pounding that drum fervently as they
Give
can.
Me more of that.
That is a horrible force of evil in this world that needs to be overcome. So I applaud you for this effort.
Thank you very much. We are this is Democratic Perspective. We were talking to Andrea Christel. She's having some classes. Please find her on the Internet. She has a local business called Specs. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks. We want to thank Steve Segner and El Portal and his breakfast and his little boutique-y hotel over there.
And all our other contributors,
and
too.
And all our other contributors. And we would like some new contributors so we can thank you. Well, I'll sit here and talk about your bar if you send us money. I'll drink at your bar if you send us
in
money.
In September, we're going to have a really fundraising bash.
We are having a fun one. We'll talk more about that. And then the month while you're gone, I will be talking about that in detail, actually.
Good.
We're going to get together and have some fun and raise some money for Democratic Perspective. Don't forget, you can hear this show and all our shows on bbid.org. bbid.org has our shows. Please go there. Thanks, folks. Be careful out there.
You've been listening to
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.